The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I'm Rich Ferguson, LA poet, musician, performer, and you are listening to Poet Escape. Welcome, everyone. Today, I'm very pleased to have as my guest poet, performer, editor, Jane Ormerod. How are you, Jane?
Hi, Rich. I am very well. I'm sitting in a car park in Santa Fe at the moment.
Nice. Jane Ormerod is the author of the full-length poetry collections Welcome to the Museum of Cattle and Recreational Vehicles on Fire, both out on Three Rooms Press, and the chapbook 11 Films, also the spoken word CD Nashville Invades Manhattan. Born on the south coast of England, Jane now lives in New York City and performs extensively across the United States and beyond. She is a founding editor of Great Weather for Media, an independent publishing company focusing on edgy and experimental poetry and prose. Jane, well done.
Thank you. That sounds impressive when you say it like that.
I know. Isn't it great? It's nice to hear your own bio back.
I know.
People read it and it's like, oh my God, that's me? Wow, I've got a lot to live up to. I've got to live up to that bio.
Who would have thought she'd have got here?
Absolutely.
In a car park in Santa Fe.
Nice. Well, you are one of the hardest working women that I know of in the poetry business. You do a lot of touring, and I want to talk about that later on in the show.
Yeah.
I want to begin today's show, actually, with a quote by the London artist Daniel Sturgis. And when speaking of your work, he says, "Acutely aware of both her literary and artistic forebears, Jane's riveting spoken word performances sublimely acknowledge the entwined traditions of Dada and early modernist poetry, the gendered and transgressive literary punk of Kathy Acker and Patti Smith, and lo-fi dub rant." I think that's a great quote. Would you agree with what he has to say about your work?
Absolutely. I'm not quite sure what lo-fi dub is, but if someone sees it there, it sounds good. But I mean, my background was like art school, so I guess I came to poetry, through art history more than anything else. Absolutely, and music. So it absolutely makes sense to me. I didn't come from a, English literature background. So art and music would be my links in.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mention art, because I know that you have that visual arts background. How would you say your visual art experience has informed and enriched your writing?
I think part of it is it's like a freedom. I really don't follow any rules. A bit like art, I think poetry or writing in general can be, whatever you want it to be. And the other thing, I guess, it still really influences me is probably composition. I like moving words around as you'd move shapes or colors on a canvas. And I do, I do move things around like that, what feels good against each other. And like a canvas, there's a border to a poem. It's on the page. Even spoken, it's got parameters.
Sure. In an interview, you once said that you tumbled into writing as the result of a bet. I was wondering if you could talk a little about that.
Yeah, and it's got me in trouble ever since. I just came back from Vegas,
right.
So yeah, this was back in the early 90s, and I was in London then, and I just had a show, a kind of warehouse art show with a group of other artists, and we were sitting outside the warehouse after a fantastic, you know, opening night, and, you know, the next day you're kind of feeling, you know, it's the day after, and, you know, no one was coming, you know, you felt like no one was coming in and showing interest, and I was looking at Time Out magazine, and there was a contest for performance art. You had to be good on the page and in performance, and the prize was basically a reading at the Institute of Contemporary Arts in London, which is a major venue, and there was really good prize money, and I just said to my friend, you know, oh, that anything must be better than painting. And we kind of got a bet, and he's, you know, he's, you know, it's like, I bet you can't win that. And it's like, oh, I bet I can. And
I did,
I was one of the six winners and performed
well
there. So my first performance was at a kind of huge venue that, you know, scared the life out of me. And I was still doing art as well for 2 or 3 years after that. But, you know, there was a little voice was saying, you know, I've actually found something that I always wanted to do, and I probably, maybe I wasn't a good enough visual artist to express what I wanted to express. But with words, which had always kind of appeared in my painting and sculpture work, you know, that was the way to go. So I just started writing.
Nice.
And I found I'd love performing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of London, you know, you're originally from England, about 60 mm-hmm. miles south of London, I believe. And then you and your husband moved to New York City in 2004. What prompted that move? Why didn't you just decide to stay in London?
Well, it was actually my husband's Pete's work and an opportunity. He'd been going between London and New York from about 2000. And so I'd been to New York quite a lot before then. And the opportunity came for him to work. So, you know, it was like at that point I was a little tired of London and I was writing and, you know, I didn't really feel like I was going in the right direction. And the opportunity came and immediately was like, it was late 2003, yeah, kind of made the move.
Nice.
And I think moving to a new country, it's a good chance to reinvent yourself and, you know, you're meeting new people. It kind of really gave me a push. My writing completely changed. People in New York liked it a hell of a lot more than they did in London. And, you know, it all went well.
Nice. Well, sort of along those lines, you know, when you moved to New York, how easy or how difficult was it for you to sort of find a groove and work your way into the various, you know, scenes, whether it's writing or art or music, performance?
Well, I really kind of aimed towards the writing because I did want to do performance and I saw there was a lot of open mics. It was difficult, you know, I'm kind of, well, probably like most people, it's, you know, you're kind of shy meeting new people and you feel very conscious if you've got a different accent. But what I did, I just went to poetry open mics every night of the week and I made it a rule to myself that every night I would speak to a new person. And so, you know, after 6 months, you know a lot of people.
Wow.
And then every time you go to a venue, there's probably three people you know. So each time you're feeling a little more comfortable. And it's just, and I still have to remind myself sometimes just, you know, talk to new people. And it, you know, your group gets wider and wider. And I, you know, if anyone ever asks me for advice, I sort of say, that's what I sort of say. Just go out and just, you know, just say hello to someone. The person sitting next to you. Just chit chat and you get into you hear new events and you just take it from there.
Yeah, kind of along those lines because I really see you doing this and you kind of said it right there. How important do you feel community is when thinking about the preservation of poetry?
I think it is important. I don't think it necessarily has to be live because obviously a lot of poets and writers, you know, it is for the page. But, you know, I think, you know, even, you know, online there's a lot, there's a, community is important. You learn from each other. And I think, obviously, artists in general are more aware of promoting themselves, whether on Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, and then you're extending your community again. Yeah. But, you know, equally there's, you know, there's poets who are very much within their own groove, and that's, you know, that's fine too. You know, you can just send out work, you know, submit work, and people may never meet you, but they've seen your words.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why don't we go ahead, and we've got a few tracks of yours that I want to play over the course of the show. Why don't we go ahead and play one of them now? I believe we have queued up Do You Know of Pains That Do Not Smell. Now, is this one off your CD, Nashville Invades Manhattan, or is this just sort of a separate track?
It's a more recent one. It's actually in Welcome to the Museum of Cattle, my most recent poetry collection.
Yes, yes. So we're going to actually talk about that in a moment. Mm. Did you create an audio CD for the book, or did you just do some particular tracks?
Three Rooms recorded a couple of two or three tracks for me to give, you know, like a promotional material for the book, which was, you know, fabulous of them. It was a really good idea.
Oh, that is a great idea. So why don't we go ahead and play that track right now then?
Do you know of pains that do not smell? Do you know of pains that do not smell? There are steps, directions on top of steps, and further steps. A man carrying a fedora or saint up the steps. Directions to the Pacific, to Quebec. Directions, curtains and beads, a coat to carry. Who is there? You have a candle, you have a tie. Is it this time of night? May you help in any way? Can you save your life so hard it cracks apart a lie? Do you know of pains that do not smell? To tell, to place around your next, what you cannot imagine, you cannot remember. No one knows the day is unattended. On Wednesdays you work the garden, leave the ladder and mourning behind. The painting and the smell of pain. Do you know of pains that do not smell? The bicycle does not always fall. The horse is unaware of the tire. When you return, you will patch the tire and the mourning. A man without carpentry carrying a hat. A man without chamber. Do you confess to Quebec? You discovered the body and called the police and were told you could leave. And you don't know what to do. Is there another way? Have you ever been afraid of anything? Not being good? Achieved pity for pity's sake? The tire was not so flat after all. Nothing dropped. No girls. All walls spotless. Why confess to anyone? And is it convenient? How far can you push the bicycle? Will you wash it, polish, accessorize? Ring, ding, ding, ding. One detail jumps to another. This is accomplishment. Where were you at 11 o'clock? You appear deeply sorrowed. Do you know of pains that smell of paint? Where were you at 11? Track down the Crown Prosecutor. Balance a crystal tumbler on his forehead. Tell his wife, what beautiful shoulder detail. Murder is not taken by strides. You will find lettuce. You will find pain. You ought to be in bed with a thriller. Do you confess? Do you confess? Is it peaceful lying with the dead? Are you in love with the never should be seen? Have you questioned who you are? There is a small boy in a cardigan inside us all. There is smoke. There is want and pretend, and Quebec continues to exist. Do you confess? Do you see and believe things as they are? Pity is bothersome, but ferries often seem embarrassing. Do you confess? You grew up together, fell in love. She wore a white dress like she was already a widow. Dancing that evening, How many times did you think of herself, always yearning the brilliant, a lovely day, the end of summer, a storm so sudden you sheltered in the gazebo. Wherever you go, whatever the date, it remains 5 years ago. Do you hope truth is established? You gave them what was needed. Will flowers help? Will kneeling? Hand over the radio, the flowers. Do you digest or direct traffic? Do you use your bicycle? Have you had lunch? Hold this hand between the flowers. Prize apart this life. The flowers will fit neatly in the trunk. Call an evidence. Call a doctor for evidence, not cure. This is a night of murder. There is distance, there is light, there is kneeling. Go back and then leave. How is life in Quebec? This time of night, do you truly experience direction? You were costumed as a sailor and he was a priest and you shared a burger and he was method. Oh yes, do you know of smells that do not pain? How did you used to paint? Oh yes, left to right or right to left. Did you cope with ladders? Would he have looked up at this point towards the people or architecture or whatever else might be there? He didn't, but would you? Are you a human being inspected? Are you openly romantic? Some choose reason, others faith. Both fail. Boom. Love is a technocrat. Are you a Dolly or an Alma? Would you give all this up for cartoons? The skin of your teeth? A smile from Montgomery Clift? Do any of us really, truly deserve to live in Quebec?
That was Do You Know of Pains That Do Not Smell from Jane Ormerod's most recent collection, Welcome to the Museum of Cattle. Jane, that's a beautiful piece. I also love how you flip it around. Toward the end of the piece, you flip the title around and say, Do You Know of Smells That Do Not Pain? I love that. That's great.
Thank you.
That's really wonderful. I love the title. What actually inspired the piece?
It's actually from the Alfred Hitchcock movie, I Confess, which was actually filmed in Quebec, about a priest and a murder. So I've done numerous poems, really, not necessarily as a series, but for the last 5 or 6 years, it's a kind of motif of mine to watch a movie and write as I watch it, sometimes bits of dialogue, but more ideas that come to me, comments from scenes, and then form a poem from then. So quite often the structure behind a poem, from the I Confess, it is actually more or less the narrative from the movie.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, if you know the movie, you get this kind of deja vu. If you don't know it, it doesn't matter. But a lot of mine, you know, some people go, I know that, it's reminding me of something. So that's the inspiration from that one.
Nice. Something that sort of a thread through that particular piece, and I think I've heard it in some other pieces of yours, that sort of line of questioning where you sort of question the reader or ask the reader a question. I really like that. You know, me as a listener, if I'm seeing you live or reading you on the page, I find that when you do that, it really creates this intimacy and just brings me into your work deeper and deeper. So I really enjoyed that quite a bit.
Thank you. I think it helps being less abstract, makes the piece less abstract. I think it does draw you in and it gives you a grip, something to grip onto.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, on first glance, some of your work appears to have a certain stream of consciousness or even a certain randomness to it. Yet when you when you look at it more closely, you can see that there really is sort of a clear through line. And
yeah.
I'm curious how you go about achieving that in your work. Is it something that comes natural? Is it something you kind of work at and shape as you go?
A lot of editing. It does look like stream of consciousness, but it very, very very rarely is. It is very carefully edited. Pieces, yeah, like I say, you know, pieces moved around, added. And when I'm writing, at a certain stage, I'll start reading it aloud. At that point, I know if some of the words sound wrong or if I'm using the wrong word, or sometimes if it just needs, you know, an extra syllable. It's layers upon layers, and sometimes, you know, the initial idea kind of vanishes. And something else takes over, something I didn't expect. And
yeah.
Quite often, maybe it's like 4 years down the line, and I kind of look at it again, and I think, oh, I was in a certain place at that time in my life, and I was influenced by that, but I didn't always realize why the piece had developed as it progressed.
Yeah, something you just mentioned, and actually, this was something that on last week's show I had Beth Lissick, and something we briefly spoke about, how we both sometimes do some of our best editing by ear. You know, if we'll take a piece, you know, out to perform, or if we're even just reciting it out loud, sometimes the ear catches things that we wouldn't necessarily see if we were just editing straight on the page.
I absolutely believe that. Quite often, if I'm doing an open mic and reading a new piece, I'll actually find my mouth will say a different word than the one that's on the page. And I think that was the word. I've been editing it for weeks, couldn't find the word. As soon as I'm performing it, it appears.
Yep. You know, some of your work can be more like prose, some experimental, dealing with rhythm and sound. How do you feel as far as some of those different forms, like when you're trying to convey different ideas, do you maybe go toward a certain form when wanting to express particular ideas?
No. In general, I just see where it's leading to. And quite often when I'm editing on the page, I will make it look more prose-like if it reads better that way.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes it really is on the page. It's just visually what suits it, what the form should look like.
Sure. So you are the founder, I believe, of Great Weather for Media. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I love Great
Thank
Weather
you.
For Media. a big fan of Great Weather for Media. What led to creating Great Weather for Media? Yeah, how did all of it come about?
It was a few, we'd had a previous venture and a kind of hardcore, the original editorial group decided to form a new company and go to bigger and better ventures, really. And we wanted to do published prose as well and publish writers from all across the world. So we started with three editors, myself, Brant Lyon and Thomas Bucaloro, and we were later joined by George Wallace, Russ Green, and just recently David Lawton, and we always have a guest prose editor for our anthologies as well. And it's been a joy. It's been a roller coaster, but you know, we're just thoroughly excited by the whole venture.
Right. Brant Lyon, someone I know that you love dearly, who's no longer with us. Great guy. I mean, great musician, philosopher, producer, all around wonderful human.
What were some
of the things that
he brought
to the press?
Brant actually thought of the Great Weather for Media name. So that was, you know, that's always going to be us. Brant thought of that. He had a terrific editorial eye and was just so enthusiastic. He loved touring. He loved meeting new people. You know, you'd turn around and he'd be talking to someone in the street. He loved meeting new writers. He was so knowledgeable. Brant was one of these people, whatever subject anyone ever mentioned, he'd know something about it, but he wasn't a know-it-all. He was just very generous and just very, very interested in people.
Yeah, Yeah. Mm. Yeah, sadly, I never got a chance to meet him in person, but I did stumble across mm-hmm. some of his videos recently when preparing for our interview. I stumbled across a couple of videos of him reading. His delight. Yeah, his delight just really comes through, even if you're just, you know, watching a video of him reading.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Yeah. I'm missing deeply.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and play another track of yours, and then we can talk more about Great Weather for media and so many other things. This is another. Now, was this piece was Bartholomew a Stranger or a Strangler? Is that also a piece in Welcome to the Museum of Cattle?
It is. Yeah. Yes.
Great title, by the way. I had to give it a double take when I first saw it.
Yeah,
it's
a strange title. Yes.
Yeah, it's great. All right, why don't we go ahead and play it then? Was Bartholomew a stranger or strangler?
Was Bartholomew a stranger or strangler? These are the horses, meet the horses. These are the horses, meet the horses. These are the horses, meet the horses. A box, not necessarily stuffed with tricks. There are light tricks, tricks of delight. Would you purchase a town just to abandon it? A blink of light, of iron, of lion roar? Which side of your body lies wall drug? Power, bijou, sand, distance, disease, aluminum, whatever left over from that which is left. Do you only remark on the remarkable? Aluminum, aluminium, illuminosities, illumin monstrosities. These are the horses, meet the horses. These are the horses, meet the horses. A covenant of ignorance, my straw, this slaughterhouse, damp, undeniable instructions I have zero intention of following. These are the horses, slap, meet the horses. These are the horses, bruise, meet the horses. I give blood. I give blood. I give blood. Anything for quiet, slap, light, celluloid, slap. Who looks after your kidneys? Slap. Who looks out for your root master brother? These are the horses, meet the horses. Stride around the room. Unearth the box containing veal, the box containing blood, the voice containing bone meal. There are traps laid for those remaining doctors, donors, the choir spoon eggs onto straw. Wrong, gripe, wrong, whatever, autonomy. It doesn't fit, this little fever of little vacuum, of little surges, mill pond rancidity, ranting into every type of animal's mouth. Oranges, good for feet, they claim. These are the horses, meet the horses. Confusion of beat, the men who weep or not, the unconfusion, pump, signs and singers exist to lure. Faith permits me to describe in such a little way, a little store without a little care of the little killing a few orange feet away. Kidderminster, bowing. Light, 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 light. I have no wish to arrive. Like a wrist in danger or a silence that leaps, the end of hillscape, cullion, cullion, is a fair picture, a fair depiction. Is fair weather preferable to decent coffee? I might, indeed I am, is close, closed, meet the horses. Light, lighting, half light, quarter horse to time, near, 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 I. A small country feels like a dark alley, a large one so close you may touch it while you sleep. Is it the same? Is it better to dirty your own laundry shears? In the drawer by the Gideon Bible, there is money. Thank you for explaining you are hauling potatoes. More money, fist or rock, without burn. Have you heard too many torch songs I need information for later purpose. In my right mind, sounds good. In my own mind, sounds better. I don't believe my mouth is cut inside. My left foot is not always right. It's not for me. This mouse-keeping face, this situation, this Pieter fool, this entertainment blockage. Where is Joseph P. McGillicuddy? In this fine city, everyone is marmalade. Grr, 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 lamb, meet your slaughterer. These are the horses, meet the horses. These are the horses, meet the horses. These are the horses, hook the horses. These are the horses, string the horses. These are the horses, hail the horses. I give blood. 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 The eye, I give blood. The lake, I give blood. The arm, I give blood. Lantern, I give blood. The light, I give blood. I give blood. I give blood. I give blood. The way light, I give blood. I give blood. The way owl rhymed with shovel.
That was Bartholomew. Was Bartholomew a Stranger or Strangler by Jane Ormerod? It's also a piece that appears in her latest poetry collection, Welcome to the Museum of Cattle. Jane, the first time I saw you perform live was at Daniel Yarian Santa Cruz Poetry Festival.
Absolutely, and I remember, reading that.
Yeah, and you performed this piece there. It was extremely dynamic. I mean, I love the piece. It was you were extremely dynamic and brought so much to the piece when you read it live. You know, your performance style is often very animated, sometimes edgy. Was that pretty much how you've always performed your work, or was it a style that you sort of grew into over time?
I'd say grew into with confidence, because I used to be such a nervous reader, and I think I've just grown into my style. Early on, I used to get quite a lot of criticisms. Like sometimes people say I move my arms too much, kind of quite random comments from people. Right. I just decided to ignore them. It's like, I can't believe there's a rule that says poets can't move their arms.
Yeah.
And if there is, I don't want to perform there. And I think, I kind of like reading, and maybe I write the same way. It's kind of reading from your body. It's kind of your core. You're reading, whether it's your heart or your stomach, wherever. I think the movement connects to that. And that is one of those, the piece you just played, it's one of those ones I just love performing live. And that was the challenge to actually get it on the page in a way that suited it. Because live, the final refrain, I love kind of basically screaming it. Although I've done very quiet versions as well. It is a piece that lends itself in sort of several different ways of performing, which I'm quite excited about.
Yeah.
It's a piece I'm very, very fond of.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that idea of reading from the body. It made me just think of something. You know, sometimes when I'm memorizing a piece to perform live, if I'm having a problem with a particular area of the piece, like trying to remember where a certain part of it, a certain segment comes within the piece, I'll sort of ascribe a certain body motion to it, and it's like that body motion gets into my muscle memory. So if I'm performing the piece, my body instinctually knows to do that gesture at that time, and then by doing the gesture, it triggers my brain to actually remember the words that were sort of ascribed to that particular body motion.
Wow, I love that idea.
It works.
Wow.
Poetry is a very subjective medium. A poem that one person may deem a good poem, another person may despise. When you and the other good folks at Great Weather for Media are looking for when you're creating an anthology, what do you look for when you're looking for a certain prose piece or poem? What attracts the eye, and what do you say pass on?
Oh, it's difficult because, you know, we do have a number of editors, and we've all got our own personal tastes. I think the thing that always strikes us first is something that surprises us. There's sometimes the things that are very, very well written, but you feel like you've read them before. It's not always subject matter. It's just, it's usually just the words. And sometimes you just get that feeling, oh, I wish I'd written that. I wish I'd thought of that idea. It's really a surprise. And I think one of the exciting things we've learned at Great Weather is that surprise comes from writers of all stages of their careers. There's numerous writers we've published, and it's their first time ever publication, as well as, you know, we've published ones who, like, scarily, like, been published in, so many great journals and have performed around the world and have written novels, you know, but there's a lot of first-time writers, and, you know, it is that surprise. It's those incredible ideas. You just think, I don't think, I haven't heard anyone else say this before.
Right. You know, a poet whom I've actually known for many years and was very pleased to see that you admire is Richard Loringer. And I've seen a few of his pieces in a few of your anthologies. I'm curious, how did you two meet, and what drew you to his work?
Oh, we met in New York when Richard was living there in Brooklyn. He's since moved to Oakland. I love his humor, but his wordplay, I love the performances, Richard's a genius, and he was an obvious choice for the our second anthology, The Understanding Between Foxes and Light. You know, Richard was a perfect choice to be our guest prose editor because, you know, he's someone we could trust, and like us, you know, he goes on what the work is good. He doesn't go on reputation, and he's a fabulous person to go on tour with.
Oh, absolutely!
Because he's joining us in LA.
Yes, and I'm very excited. I was very excited to see that he was going to be coming back to LA. I look forward to reading with him. Well, speaking of touring, you know. You do a lot of touring with Great Weather for Media. Why is that? I mean, do you find that's one of the best ways for you to sort of acquire new readers? Talk about touring.
We get more and more people aware of us. It makes us, look good. And, you know, it just proves that we're interested in not just New York writers, and personally, you know, we just love meeting people, hearing people. You know, it's great when we've got an extra day in the city, we can check out open mics, hear new people, meet people, you know, and I'm more than happy to answer questions if anyone wants to know about, you know, small press publishing, performing, submitting work, you know, because all the editors here are writers ourselves. You know, we've all been rejected times than we've been accepted. You know, we know what it's like. We're always happy to talk about that. But I just love traveling. I love new places and new adventures.
Any memorable road stories, either of a really, really good show or one that was just left you feeling like, get me the hell out of here as soon as possible?
A good story or a bad story?
You can do one of both, or whatever strikes your fancy.
I think I performed once in New Jersey to an audience of two, and one of those two people had one leg.
Wow.
I guess that's a bad story, but, you know, it's the thing, the show must go on. The good ones have been way more good ones. It's just had a... You know, just an amazing range of readings in New York City, and I wouldn't like to single any of those out because it's just been just tremendous when you see, like, from the previous year how your audience is growing and you get the feedback and you just think, this is, you know, this is exactly what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have I want to touch back on New York City for a moment, since you brought it up. You know, compared to now and when you first arrived in New York, would you say the city continues to help nurture and foster your creativity, and also what you're trying to accomplish in the literary scene with Great Weather for Media?
Yeah, you know, New York's like every city in the world is changing. There's been several venues closing recently, such as the Bowery Poetry Club, which has changed slightly. But, you know, but there's people finding, you know, new things all the time. And there's series like The Inspired Word in New York City, which has been crucial for getting huge amounts of people to spoken word events, comedy, music, and mixing those genres. And I think that's the way I feel quite a lot of things are going at the moment, is actually events which do mix maybe poetry. One of our contributors and also readers in on the tour is Puma Pearl, and she also fronts a band. And, yeah, she combines music and poetry. And there feels like a huge interest in this at the moment, and I think that's another exciting, that's a really exciting development.
Nice. So
and of course, New York's got such a buzz, you know, we're doing everything like, you know, every
absolutely. So you're in Santa Fe tonight, and you're going to be in L.A. This coming week. Can you talk about the L.A. shows that you have coming up?
Yeah, we were at Stories Books and Cafe on Thursday, and at Beyond Baroque in Venice on Saturday. Two venues which I performed at before, and I love both of them.
And the story show is at 7:30?
Yeah, 7, yeah.
7,
yeah,
and then the Beyond Baroque show...
It goes an extra 30 minutes, yeah. And then Beyond Baroque's 4 till 6.
Beyond Baroque
has a good chance to go
Saturday, 4 to 6.
We've got a tremendous group of readers, including yourself.
Yes, and I'm really excited to be a part of the mix again. I really had a great time the last time I was there. Why don't we go ahead and play another track, and then I'll ask you a few more questions.
Sure.
This next track actually is a track that you collaborated with a band, the Ne'er-do-wells, Lying Sideways, Eyes Closed, Rain.
That was Brant Lyon's project. It was a band he worked with a lot. Did an open mic where you were backed by the Ne'er-do-wells, and he got the CD together.
It's great.
So, yeah, every time I listen to this, I think of Brant.
Who are the musicians that played on it? I love the guitar work.
Davey Patterson was like the singer and lead guitarist. But yeah, and then there was a changing rotor of the band, absolutely incredible musicians. Dave's a great guy.
Great. All right, why don't we go ahead and listen to that track then. This is by Jane Ormerod and the Ne'er-do-wells. This is Lying Sideways, Eyes Closed, Rain.
A June. An empty dune of streets, a dune, bay horses' legs, salt paper, hairpin, tapping, bending songs. There is a fish, a bib, no hair, nor hands. There is a fish, a face, there is an oar. Handles, blouse, a turret, mother, wash, abandoned, northern, wheaty, a wind. There is a star for little horse, bedtime blurb for little horse. Bread for breath, pump for horse. Remember, little, little horse. Remember, horsey, little horse. Not very far, not very far, not very far to go. Ha, ha. Not very far, not very far, not very far to go. Ha, ha. Yeah. anchored stone. Please come in. Please come in. Please come in. Please come in. Children ripping legs from secrets. Girls smoking pipe trails. Old style lake. Limb of mutton sleeve. Straw, straw. The air in Malmo. Grim games, kitchen pantry. That man, of her, of him, of go and long. I do, or very close. Indeed, white bells standing here with folded letter. No white pipe smoke. Huff, huff. Ain't mouth. Ain't mouth. Ain't mouth. Blur, yellow blur, yellow blur, yellow. So long, so long, so long, so long. Please come in. I, the old man, old who almost always never weeps. Two large horses are where you are from Guernsey heifer. Where, whence, doctor or linguist? Modern, biological, remove and microscope these eyes. Yes, please do. A fellow with no signature. Indeed, yes, try again, yes, say little horsey, yes, say little horsey, withdraw your name, your birthday, mother's maiden, spit out, spit out, spit out, spit out, obsolete, unlearn, scrubbered up to nothing. Can you say blunt instrument? Can you say prayer? The picture of the smiling Christ. Forget me not. Treaties, other things. Put down. Put it down. This is your hand. This is your arm. This is your shoulder. This is your cap. This is your blade. Run, run. To you, respond to fame, trust, joyce. A mount, a mount, a mount. In Malmo, sleep, hook, tenter, more, this, balance, moment, 858, 832, babe and hair to rock to sleep, charm to meet you, charm to sleep, two little horses rock to sleep, tenter and cavalry rock to sleep, not very far, not very far, not very far to go, ha, ha, not very far, not very far, not very far to go, ha, ha. Close your eyes. Remember our talk. This is your tree frog moment. Snatch the rein, sir. Gallantly ride. Ha! Ha! Ha!
That was Jane Ormerod and the Ne'er-do-wells with Lying Sideways, Eyes Closed Rain. Jane, like myself, you place an emphasis on live poetry performance. Why is live performance important to you?
I think it's because it seems such an unlikely thing for me to do. I think growing up, I didn't know kind of poetry performance existed. I'm still kind of shocked I can do it, and I think it's really testing myself. I think I've, over the years I've realised I'm actually not quite so scared of being on stage as I thought I might be. It is kind of conquering your fears a little bit. And,
yeah, absolutely.
I love it, and I do. You know, like I think you know most performers. You know, you feed off the energy, and you learn so much. You know, you learn from your mistakes and the times you've just. You know, if people walk out, you kind of, you know, you analyze things. I love the energy of it.
Yeah. Do you feel that live poetry performance is perhaps a way to get new people into poetry that might not otherwise have an aversion to it on the page or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of people who you wouldn't dream going to a poetry reading. They may go and see a band, they may go to the theatre, but, you know, or performance art, but poetry can sound something, you know, kind of a man with a beard mumbling. nothing against men with beards who mumble, but...
I feel like Jane Ormerod homecoming on the title of the
episode.
A man with a beard mumbling.
And occasionally, you know, we may throw in a man with a beard mumbling just to toy with the audience. But, you can have a great night out at spoken word events. It's a real pleasure. And, I think everyone should try it.
Yes, absolutely. One of the greats, you know, Lou Reed passed away last week, and his approach often blurred the lines between talking and singing. And, you know, there really was a poetic element to so much of his work. What are some of your thoughts on Lou and what he brought to music, poetry, and art?
I've been talking about Lou Reed's death with a lot of friends. And I was talking to Puma Pearl last night, and I was saying, you know, the Velvet Underground, the one, The Gift, is that off their second album? And it's, you know, I think that was one of those pieces of thought. I could be a writer. You know, things can be kind of half music, half written, performed, spoken rather than sung. It can have a narrative. It can include humor at the end. It's a very dark, funny piece. And, you know, he was, right at the end, he was doing things like with Metallica, which, like, who would have thought that?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's just, you know, you can choose your own path. And, you know, he really did. He didn't rest on his laurels, experimenting, and, he sorely missed.
Yeah. We're getting close to the end of our time. I want to ask you another question or two. Do you... how often do you get back to London or the UK to either visit or perform? And do you feel that there's very much of a difference between poetry appreciation in the US versus the UK?
I do go to the UK several times a year. It's mainly to see friends and family. So I don't have time to perform or check out the spoken word scene very much. But I've heard it's in incredible shape at the moment. And actually Richard Loringer, who we're just talking about, has just come back from a trip there, and he's promised to tell me all his adventures and the things he's found out. In the last couple of years, I've read at a couple of places, and in Ireland as well. The Irish particularly like me, so I'm dying to go back to Ireland.
Oh, nice, nice. Well, with me today has been Jane Ormerod. She is the author of the most recent poetry collection, Welcome to the Museum of Cattle. She's also the founding editor of Great Weather for Media. Jane, what is the best way for people to find out about you and Great Weather for Media online?
My website's easy to remember. It's janeormerod.com. Great Weather for Media is greatweatherformedia.com. There's links to that on my own personal website as well. So as long as everyone remembers Jane Ormerod, they'll be able to find out more.
Yeah. And again, Jane is with Great Weather for Media tonight in Santa Fe for anyone who's listening who might be in the Santa Fe area. And this coming Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. It's starting in 5 minutes, guys.
And come on.
I'm working towards the door at this moment.
That's right. In Los Angeles this Thursday, November 7th, at Stories Books, the Great Stories Books in Echo Park, 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. And this Saturday, November 9th, at Beyond Baroque in Venice, lovely Venice, California. That show starts at 4 p.m. So again, thank you very much for being on the show, Jane.
Oh, thank you so much, Rich. And I'll see you next day.
Yeah. And I also want to send out a big thank you to our show's sponsor for all your writerly needs. Please contact Tyson Cornell and the lovely Julia at Rare Bird Lit. You can find them online at rarebirdlit.com. Also, a big thanks to Tyson Cornell for production assistance with today's show. Poetescape's theme music is by We Voice Sing. You can find them online at wevoicesing.com. You can find their debut CD of Wishbones and Gunfire on CD Baby, iTunes, Rhapsody, Spotify. You can find me online at wevoicesing.com, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and you can find my poetry collection, Eighth and Agony, on Amazon or at Punk Hostage Press. Tune in next week when my guest will be L.A. writer, musician, and world-renowned belly dancer, the lovely Miss Pleasant Gaiman. Until then, I'm Rich Ferguson, and thanks for tuning in to Poetescape.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.